All right. The first poet is going to be, she's read tonight, but she wants to do an encore because nobody said encore, but tonight I'm saying encore. So she gets to read because she wanted to read for someone tonight. Okay, that's why. Encore, encore. Come on up here and read. Judith Robertson.
Thank you. And you all thought you had enough of me, right? Here I am again. I have to read this because I couldn't find it quickly enough when I was standing here before you. And it is a poem I wrote for Rosalie Rothman, who is kind of the dean of women poets of Pittsburgh, and much more than that. But I did write this for her, and I wanted it to be read tonight. It's called Unbinding. It's on page 12 of Orange Fire. A cold night, slick streets, milky snow. We complain a little, then listen to the Greek poems set to music. Saranda, a voice in agony, a wail we know, a sob that is whispered, strings that grieve, bells that beat against the heart. Ritsos, dazed, imprisoned on an island. Ritsos, looking out at the Aegean, opening his mouth to find wretchedness, green as leaves pour forth. To be free for just 1 hour, to thrust the head into blessed fog, to feel life move as a river, to lie down on grass and mingle hot sweat with dew, tears with stones, dear God. We are stunned, gutted as fish. Slowly we weave our way out, blink back into the deep night. The wet sky has cleared. The Oakland street is wide open. We breathe in the cold. Rosalie takes my arm. The dying Greek stays with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi. Wow. What a turnout tonight. March on the Cheat. Cheat River, West Virginia. November snows feed foaming falls, freshets that fling their gelid cascades down canyon walls. They bounce and flail, rush to roil the rising river. Fine sprays gild tiers of branches with gleaming crystal. Lavish exposed rock with a clear ice glaze. Mountain laurels and rhododendron become singular works of art. Today, the perfect contrast, the river's rampaging rapids, iced brambles covered by stilled bright snow, rural snow, untainted by urban blight, layered without a whisper of wind. 3 inches of ermine white on every pine, every hardwood. Each sprig of needles, any array of twigs, a fresh fascination. The sun, brilliant on the water, beams from the white lace of bare branches to the snowy boughs of blue spruce, hemlock, a solitary holly. It fights in vain to stay the frigid air, air still as stone, air that stands hairs on napes, wraps shoulders in icy embrace. We don wool, wetsuits, ready the rafts, enter the rage and roar. Plunging currents shoot us down the snow-sculpted canyon, paddles push to downstream V's, past hydraulics, through standing waves, every icicle a glint in the eye.
Laura, where are you? Laura, okay, you're up.
Merci beaucoup, monsieur. Merci beaucoup, monsieur. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Okay. I'm sorry. My language is polyglot.
Okay.
That's English. This poem is dedicated to a wonderful lady I recently met. And she finds the delight in some of the smallest things in life that we sometimes take for granted. Hoy Wen's delightful fireflies. At the Golden Palace we ate, she delighted in the Chinese plates. Her conversation was loquacious, but never audacious. After we used our chopsticks, there was nothing left to pick. We carefully strolled home at sunset, for there was nothing to be upset. Alas, we came upon the WPU. There was something amazing for her to view. Not to have seen in Shanghai the beauty of a firefly. Hoi Wen's face and eyes were lit with delight, with dozens of fireflies in flight, a gentle soft hand outstretched. A single firefly was fetched. Each firefly knew her gentleness, that no harm would befall her openness. She had my heart smiling as Hoi Wen was enjoying, twirling about in joys of life, as if music played in a fight. Just the tiny light of a firefly can bring joy that no money can buy. I'm also a composer and a musician, and I've composed 54 sonatas, and I've started composing sonatas to go along with my poetry. There's one that goes along with this, but this is not the audience for that.
This is very different from the kind of thing I usually read, but the Squirrel Hill poets said I should read this at Hemingway's. On committees, the question of whether to signal the beginnings and endings of classes with bells, chimes, or buzzers was handed by the Committee on Committees to the Long Range Planning Committee, which, in hope that a decision be reached any time within the next 5 years, turned it over to the Academic Scheduling Committee, which, however, could not schedule a time to discuss it, and so passed it on to the President's Advisory Committee, which advised him to try next the Academic Scheduling Committee, which this time rerouted it to the Personnel Committee, which, for lack of a quorum, laid it on the table, where it was discovered the next morning by the Publications Committee, which proofread it but attached a rejection slip, and dropped it into the campus mail, where it was picked up by the Student Affairs Committee, which, being preoccupied with the co-ed roommates policy campaign, tossed it into the mailbox of, for the sake of the pun, the hearing committee, which never meets. Late that spring, an electrical storm shorted out all the buzzers, and maintenance replaced them with bells. Everyone claimed credit.
Thank you, Nancy. Corona Bears, Dave.
By the shores of Kitchigumee. I once backed a car up in Amherst and almost ran over Emily Dickinson. And this is what she said. At dawn, I don the foxglove. I will outfox the fox. At noon, I dress in hollyhocks and tame the tiger lily's locks. I'm more at home with dandelions, Queen Anne's lace, and wilder bloom than corseted and taffeta imprisoned in the drawing room. A daisy, I complete the chain. My center is the sun. The hedgehog rose, the damask, the calico are one. By lantern light, I kneel above lobelia's trailing stems. I glory in the moonflower that blooms in ember's ends. Petaled in possibility, I'll wait for you if God allows. Delphinium has taught me forever is composed of nows.
I'll sit because those are a couple of tough acts to follow. All right, okay. Call this the soul. Sun and steel and colored glass, swaying our focus from the world we see around us to the world we reside in. The Congress of bowed heads, brain waves synchronized as the vocal cords expand and contract in unison, emoting through time and space the essential connections of being, personifying resonance, endowing it with all the mysticism of the sublime, reaching into our ethereal selves to find strength in the silence of brutal survival. Embracing the power of gods through the connection of unified community, caught between the stresses of life and death, the individual searching for space between the push and the pull before the inevitable imbalance divides the body from the soul. Thank you.
Mary Lou, yes. Thank you. Hi, everyone. It's your lucky night. I have a short one. And just very briefly, this stems from a real conversation that I had with a young man who was a friend of my family who was visiting us back from his second tour in Afghanistan. It's called Concourse. Stepping from the jetway in full desert camo, boots and duffel bag, the handshake uninvited, the 40th or 50th time, thank you for your service, a smile and a nod, and leave me alone. I'm 20 years old, and you are a fool if you think you know what I have seen. Thank you.
Joe, count on. Where are you at, Joe?
Okay, Over the Winter, I read On the Road by Jack Kerouac, so that's where this comes from. The ghost of Jack Kerouac. Your eyes, your ears, your hands, your soul. Take the wheel and drive.
Thank you. Come on, Rose.
Thank you. Okay. Again, this poem is about my dad, for my dad. My dad passed away recently, and I write a lot about that. Oops, I just moved that. Okay. The walls. From that space over there, your life is gone. Just the air there now, life-sustaining air that reclaimed itself as you departed. My silent candle, you sit on the table, flame still shaped by the air. A picture of your youth covers one side, the side of you I cry for. How it left you, youth, your most adored, your bride, eyes bright with future. Oh, Dad, I loved the little girl that knew you best, loved you most, woke you when you slept. I cry for these memories to not leave me as you did, struggled off from your tight hold on life, your denial of it all, coming down, pressing your body into your stranger in the night, leaving me in everything you couldn't or shouldn't do, laugh too loudly, dance only slowly, die absolutely penniless. When the air comes for me on my island, feet in the sand, shuffling.
My friend Lucille Siebert. Lucille, I know you're here somewhere. All right. Hey, what's up, baby? Take your time, Lucille. We're not in the hurry. It's a great night for both.
Crazy tonight. I think so. I can draw. It is not your business whether I can draw or not. I can draw well enough, thank you, if not as well as you. And I will draw a beautiful mansion with a wide porch and pillars, and a dormer window, and lots of gingerbread. I will draw the shingles and the flowers along the walk, and maybe even the doorknob. I can imagine how the rooms look inside, with satin cushions and velvet drapes, marvelous handcrafts from all over the world, and beautiful paintings. And I can imagine what it would be like to live there.
It looks like it's Boinkas, B-O-I-N-K.
Here it comes.
Boinkas.
Oh, okay. Come on up here. That's partly your fault. Isn't it, right?
Yeah, it is. I type too much. Yeah, I'm a Twitter poet for the most part, which is why I love getting rid of these 35-page poems. No. Now, this is called The Dowsing Stick of Lilydale, Western New York. I climb the wisteria of Route 5, peer through a trellis of grass at a brief platter of lake. It's offered up with the indulgence of morning light, tantalizing and slightly angled towards me and briefly withdrawn behind slats of pastel houses and roadside stands. I'm planning to get juiced on a vineyard tour, but an infection of creation burns at my brow. An assembly of spiritualists hoard the sun in their cottages on the upper Casadaga Lake in a place called Lilydale. I've come to find them in their orderly covens, their cottages and lawns, smoking back to heaven the lava of the nighttime dew. For those who turn cards for unusual growths, for those who fashion outcomes for children whose charm and pocket money has gone to drugs, for those who turn checkered polyester faces wintered into hardened lakeside pebbles back into acceptable consistency of leather. I've come for the laying on of hands. I've come to see Rose with her smear of dark eyes. She tells me the bracelets of skin at my wrists ensure I will see 80. She lays palms on my temples as if she's going to crush me at the scalp line. She pulls my head to her chest and lifts my skull to decompress my neck. She looks to petals of paint growing from the ceiling. A sound comes from within her, and a vibration of magnetic cars shuddering in me and rustling the paint like a wind. Later, she leans me back on a divan, with one palm on my forehead and the other on the small of my back. She coaxes my water of energy to a restful tide. I drift, and she awls out the copper of me with sonorific rib stories of Kirlian photography, of how she can feel the warmth of an old soul in me, of how gray fists at the Chautauqua Institute hammer with disapproval at Rose and her kind, of how I am a natural grumbler, for I was born when the moon was trapped in the seventh house, of how she thinks I'm psychic and I must have the healing hands. Rose unclasps the latch of her voice, rolls as she walks on a bad hip, and leaves me to doze. Through the window, she genuflects a tin sprinkler over her flower bed. It's her dousing stick, from which the water flows backwards, coaxing from the poultice death of soil a perfume of existence, color, odor, a swaying movement from the ground. Thank you.
Thank you. How do you say your name?
Gorgeous.
Come on, quick. Okay. Rochella, where are you at? I know you're somewhere. Come on.
I know. Okay, so for the last year and a half, I've been writing this series about the speakers of Hellraiser. Gets into a lot of trouble. You know, that kind of stuff. But I decided to do a challenge, and my poem's entitled Hellraiser Writes a Love Poem. Summer 2013, I can't talk to you without five cherry vodkas. Your emerald green eyes completely freeze me. One look of disappointment breaks every bone of my inner skeleton. When scanning my body, they reconstruct me into a good-natured tomboy. Thank you.
Okay, this is a short pantoum, and the title of it is Doggerel. I've never written a pantoum, and this may be why. I have visions of a cocker spaniel panting at a tomb beyond the castled walls of Allegheny Cemetery, missile monuments ready to launch the dead to Saint elsewhere. I have visions of a cocker spaniel panting at a tomb, dragging his leash and empty Fido bowl as he reads the inscriptions, missile monuments ready to launch the dead to Saint elsewhere. Row after row, he doggedly searches for Mr. Relinkowitz's 13 letters, dragging his leash and empty Fido bowl as he reads the inscriptions beyond the castled walls of Allegheny Cemetery. Row after row, he doggedly searches for Mr. Relinkowitz's 13 letters. I've never written a pantoum, and this may be why. Thanks.
This looks like Danny Boiler. Well, Danny, I know you're
close enough. I am.
How do you say? What's your last name, Daniel?
Boylan, Daniel. And I think I'm the last one. You guys are really lucky. Oh, okay. Anyway, this is called The One and Only. I had called us Titletown USA quite so many years ago. After about our third championship ring. I'm pretty sure it was. After all, no one else had even come close to accomplishing the same. But that's understandable, as no one else had anything comparable to our level of game. Unfortunately, the name was not picked up and promoted, so we never became known by that title and celebrated for such. For whatever reason, the name Blitzburg was pushed, as was preferred. A great name to be known, by which to be known throughout the football world. But shouldn't we also be recognized for our other multiple championships, as we do hold them, though not as many, in hockey and baseball too? So as great a name as Blitzburg is, we have sold ourselves far too short, considering that we are not a city with only a single championship winning sport. Please, Pittsburgh, let's correct this injustice to us, if it's not already too late. We have earned the right to claim full credit for all the honors we've achieved. So let's proclaim it. We are the only city on this planet worthy of the name, known that the world's most livable city and Titletown, USA, are both Pittsburgh, the only one and the same.
Tonight it was a lot of fun for me. I enjoyed all the poetry. And I want you to know that I really do, Shirley, I really love you a lot. I think you're great stuff, man. And you have to always be able to kind of laugh at yourself, find your sorrows where you have to find them. And I actually find energy. My life is a poem. It's so much energy. I pull from it. I mean, I observe. And I'll tell you, some of you may or may not know, I was a homicide detective. So when you come into a scene, say this was the scene, you would like view the room clockwise, then counter before you even step in. Like you just don't run in and tramp over everything. And then you counterclockwise, then you crisscross with your eyes. Do that in a poem. Do that with life. If you're riding a streetcar, whatever you're doing, learn. And then remember. In the last, say, 24 hours, I had one young man down my gym. I know this is energy. He's been shot twice with a .45 caliber, and he had the bullet holes in him and his ribs, and we talked about it, and he knew who shot him, and he lied to me. I said, "You know who shot you?" He says, "No, you don't." I said, "That's enough. Enough lie." And then we discussed it. Then today, this morning, I saw a guy, the homicide detectives were out there, and he was hit by a bike, and his bike was smashed, and I knew the homicide detectives, and I asked him, I said, "Can I have the bike for my kids?" Because I knew there was a poem there. And then I watched in McKees Rock a drug bust, which I did that also, and they had the guy handcuffed. There's a poem. I said, "Wow, this is so cool." And then I was coming over here, and I was coming out of McKees Rock, and this woman had this little boy, I guess he was about 8 years old, and she says, "Listen," I'm not going to use the whole language for you. She goes, "Listen, you little MF-er, I said I'm not buying you a slushie. I don't give a F, I'm not spending my money." And this became this energy, and she goes, "Where are you going to get the money?" Again, this language was so almost divine. It's not a lack of vocabulary. I just think she's just adding to it. And with that, this is just, again, titles. Sometimes you'll be given a handle, and sometimes you'll get your head stuffed in the commode, and sometimes you break a leg falling out of a tree, and sometimes you get your pants pulled down. That's one of my titles. Hamlet had his problems, too. Another one. Seymour's probably in hell, standing upside down with his head in a puddle of shit. Okay, that's the titles tonight. See you next week. Bye.